Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Zen Buddhism by the numbers, number six, the six realms. The lower realms, hell realm, hungry ghosts, animals, and the higher realms, humans, demigods, asuras, and gods, devas. From Dogen Kigen Zenji's Life, Death. In living, there's nothing but life. In dying, there's nothing but death. So let life be life. And when death comes, face it and offer yourself. Don't love one and hate the other. This life-death is the life of the Buddha. Hate it and you lose the life of the Buddha. Dwell in samsara, holding tight to it, and you lose the life of the Buddha. So all that's left is a lifeless Buddha. Only when you neither love nor hate are you in the heart of the Buddha. Never judge. Don't talk about it. Cut body mind free and abandon it. Throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. Let him show you the way and simply follow him without trying or fretting. Then you can be free from life, death. Who can resist that? So happy day before the day before Halloween. I love Halloween. Aside from having a sweet tooth, it was a wonderful time with my kids dressing up and playing all sorts of Halloween games. I love scary movies and scary stories and books. One of my favorite scary movies is The Exorcist. And the topic for today is some scary stuff. We've got hell realms and hungry ghosts and fighting demigods and all kinds of scary stuff. But before I get onto those topics, I should talk a little bit about, number one, the person whose memorial we're celebrating today, which is really important. Soen Shaku was one of the very important figures in the migration of Buddhism from Japan to the United States. And we tend to remember and memorialize people who are in some ways pioneers or rebels, people who don't take the usual establishment path. And Soen Shaku was one of those. He was ordained as a very young man and actually received Dharma transmission when he was only 25 years old. So obviously a great talent in terms of Buddhist understanding and practice. But he wasn't satisfied with that. And unlike pretty much anybody in Japan, he chose to go to the west into Southeast Asia. I think it was Thailand, but I could be mistaken. And to practice for 3 years as a Theravadan monk in the forest monk tradition. He felt that the Japanese establishment was somewhat corrupt and soft and losing its way, and so he sought out what he thought might be a purer experience. Then in 1893, when the World's Fair was going on in Chicago, there were a bunch of conferences and parliaments and all kinds of congresses, getting together people from around the world who had various kinds of interests, probably mostly mercantile, but it was also the scene of the World Parliament of Religions, in which America was first introduced to living practitioners of various religions, the Jain religion, Hinduism. There were Swamis who came and talked about meditation and yoga and Hindu practices. And representing Zen was Soen Shaku. And he came with two people accompanying him, one a young layperson named D.T. Suzuki, who would go on to become one of the founders of the intellectual foundation of Zen in America, writing many, many books and essays on Zen. He was a very dedicated practitioner. Although a layperson, he was a person of great insight. And of course, he translated many Buddhist texts and really laid the foundation for the intellectual approach to Zen Buddhism. He also founded the Zen Study Society. So this organization was originally an offshoot of D.T. Suzuki, although by the time it was taken over and heralded by Edo Roshi, the society had largely been dormant for a while. The other person was Nyogen Senzaki, who was a monk who was sent by his teacher, Soen Shaku, after the World's Fair to live in San Francisco and stayed there for many, many years and established the foundations of Zen practice as we know it, a practice of meditation, of worship and chanting, and more meditation, more zazen. So he really established the root of practice. You have on one hand the intellectual side, and on the other hand the practice side. So we owe a debt of gratitude to both of those practitioners, and both of those were introduced to the United States by their teacher, Soen Shaku. But the person that I really want to talk about today is Dogen Kigen Zenji, who is not in our lineage. He is not a Rinzai ancestor. Dogen was born in the year 1200 in Japan and died in the year 1253. So a relatively short life. I can say that now since I'm 67. For some of you it may seem like a relatively long life, but he died relatively young. We don't know very much about his background. He was the illegitimate son of an imperial court official, as far as anybody can tell. And his mother died when he was quite young. He was only about 7 when his mother died. So he became an orphan since his father didn't recognize or support him. Became an orphan quite young and was attracted to the religious life and went to practice and study in the Tendai school of Buddhism first. The Tendai school of Buddhism had been established in Japan already for 200 or 300 years. So it was the establishment. But he was very unsatisfied. One of the central doctrines of the Tendai school, similar to the Zen school, is that everybody has Buddha nature from the beginning. And Dogen said, okay, I can buy that, everybody has Buddha nature, but if everybody has Buddha nature, how come to become Buddha? Buddha had to leave home and go practice and do all sorts of austerities and go off and study and meditate for years and years before enlightenment. And why is it that all Buddhas have to practice? Why is it that we don't just know our Buddha nature from the beginning? What he was really asking was, how come I'm so miserable? I mean, if I'm Buddha, why am I so screwed up? You know, which is the question that most of us have. If I'm Buddha, why don't I feel like it? How come a lot of the time I'm angry or I'm depressed or I want things that I know I shouldn't want? And Dogen, being a very passionate and pure-minded individual, was not content to let that rest. So first he went to study Rinzai Zen in Japan. Rinzai Zen had been introduced into Japan in the late 12th century by Eisai, or Myoan Yosai Zenji, the founder of Rinzai Zen in Japan, although his lineage didn't survive. Rinzai Zen, the lineage that we're part of, and all lineages in Japan, came through Nampo almost a century later. So he went to study at that time. He was still quite young, but Eisai had died a couple of years before, so he went to study with Eisai's successor, Myozen. And he studied koans, and he found some degree of compatibility with the Zen school. But still there was something that he wasn't quite satisfied. And so he made the journey to China in 1223, when he was only 23 years old, he went to China after about 6 years of studying Rinzai Zen. And he again studied koans in China until he found a teacher who wasn't really interested in teaching koans, a teacher named Ruijing. And he practiced intensely with Ruijing, practiced Zazen intensely. And one day he heard Ruijing say the phrase, cast off body and mind. And suddenly, like that, Dogen cast off body and mind. So it seems like a very cataclysmic awakening, but it was the fruit of years of study and searching. Later, Dogen wrote, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. To be enlightened by all things is to cast off body and mind of the self as well as all others. Even the traces of enlightenment are wiped out, and life with traceless enlightenment goes on forever and ever. So that was Dogen. Dogen wrote many, many works, including one called Fukan Zazenji, which was essentially the first manual of how to do Zazen. How to sit, how to work with the mind and with thoughts. A manual that is still studied. He wrote Shobo Genzo, which sometimes is translated as the treasury of the Dharma Eye, which has three volumes. There's a wonderful translation of it by Edo Roshi. I take today's text from that translation, although I made a few minor changes, particularly changing the format. I wrote it out as if it was a poem, whereas it was originally published as prose. But Dogen's prose is so poetic that it's easily adapted to the poetic form. So what does this verse from Dogen, this excerpt from his life-death, have to do with the six realms? Life-death is another term for samsara, which is to say where we all find ourselves. Samsara is essentially existence. And the marks of existence are three marks. One is impermanent. Everything is changing. Nothing lasts. Everything is in flux. Nothing is independent. That's another way of saying there's no self. Everything is perfectly interdependent, dependent on conditions. It's something I talked about yesterday. And the other mark of existence in the samsaric world is dukkha, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, dissatisfaction. So those are the underlying realities of samsara, which is existence as we know it. And the realm of samsara consists of six divisions, the six realms, the lower realms marked by intense suffering and ignorance, the hell realm, the hungry ghosts, animals, and the higher realms, the gods, the demigods or asuras, and humans. The six realms can be thought of as six different states or conditions, six different places, or six different psychological conditions. The gods you can think of as people who have nothing but pleasure. It's kind of how the people who are hungry and ill-fed and ill-housed imagine life would be if they were rich. Ah, if I only were rich, then I would live like a god. There's no dissatisfaction. There's no pain. Everything's wonderful. Everything is luxurious. I think it's what Donald Trump's followers think Donald Trump's life is like. Everything is just fantastic. But the problem with this realm is, number one, although everything is pleasant, it's prone to forming attachments. And it's also prone to just having no heart. If you've not suffered yourself, you don't care about the suffering of others. If you've not experienced pain, you don't care about the pain of others. Kind of like Donald Trump. But I don't want to get into politics. So as wonderful as the realm of the gods may be, it's not really conducive to total enlightenment or a total opening of the heart. And unlike the cosmology that we have in Christianity, where if you've punched your ticket and gotten into heaven, you're there forever and ever, in Buddhism, one of the fundamental ideas is that nothing is permanent. Everything changes. And if everything changes, then eventually the gods are going to find themselves somewhere else. And depending on how they behave, they may not like it very much. Next on the list is the demigods or asuras, who are depicted as always angry and always fighting and always wanting something, always wanting power, position. They'll even pick fights with the gods. You can think of those as politicians. But we all have that side to us also. It's that side of us that is just itching for a fight and itching to make a name for ourselves. Then we get the humans. And the humans are kind of like Goldilocks. You know, not too high, not too low. There's not so much suffering that you can't think. But there's enough that you can identify with the suffering of others and open up your heart. You may not have complete wisdom, but you have a mind that is capable of understanding, of learning from mistakes and learning the Dharma. So it's the Goldilocks realm. Of course, this is a simplistic notion because humans are really much more complex than that. And some humans suffer horrendously, and some people are incapable of learning. But this is more or less the condition as the Buddhist cosmology sees it. We've got a chance, at least a chance. And it's thought that the human condition is very rare. In the morning service, we say this Dharma is rarely met with, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of eons. That's because, number one, it's very rare to have a human life. And number two, even if you're lucky enough to have a human life, it's very rare to hear somebody talk about the Dharma and to explain things. So humans are the luckiest, even though they're ranked below the gods and the demigods as far as power and comfort. Then there are the animals who act by instinct and without reason. And then there are the hungry ghosts. When we eat in the zendo, in the temple, we have our formal meals. While we're chanting, we pass along an offering board. And that offering board is an offering to the hungry ghosts, an offering to the suffering creatures that we don't see but are here with us. Hungry ghosts are described as having enormous bellies and very, very skinny necks. Their necks are so skinny that they can barely swallow. Which is why you only leave a little morsel, because it couldn't possibly get down that skinny neck if it was any more than a morsel. So they're never satisfied. They're always hungry. They're always suffering. And this, of course, is our condition when we are under the influence of the poison of grasping, wanting more, always wanting more. that impulse of reaching out, grabbing more, taking more than you could possibly ever use, even while others around you are starving. That's the impulse that creates hungry ghosts. In the hell realm, again, unlike the Christian idea of hell, it's only a temporary condition. Although temporary can last for centuries. But eventually, the denizens of hell are sprung. And hell is pictured as a subterranean place of either intense heat or intense cold. A very claustrophobic place of eternal torment. Not quite eternal, but since you're being tormented, it seems eternal. Kind of like in Zazen. So those are the realms, and the realms are essentially places that we go to when we are, as Hakuin says, lost in the darkness of ignorance. In the Song of Zazen, he says, the reason why we transmigrate through the six worlds is that we are lost in the darkness of ignorance. So you can, if you are one who believes in reincarnation, you can see these realms as places in which people are reborn. Or if the idea of reincarnation doesn't really appeal to you, doesn't seem to make sense, you can just see them as places that we go to mentally under the influence of ignorance, the three poisons, ignorance, grasping and aversion, or greed, anger and delusion. When you're caught by any one of those, you go to one of these realms. So how do we get out of them? How do we free ourselves from this transmigration through the six worlds? Bodhidharma said it yesterday in his outline of practice. If you realize that appearances are empty, that being is pure, that there is no defilement. In other words, if you wake up to the idea of impermanence and non-self, but this waking up is the result of practice, stabilizing your heart, your mind, your attention, getting used to. That's another way of translating the root word for practice, at least in the Tibetan tradition. The word that they use for practice can also be translated as getting used to. Getting used to emptiness. When we go into samadhi, we touch this reality of emptiness. And when we practice, eventually it seems to permeate our being, our mind, our heart, our body gets permeated by this experience of emptiness. And then it's easy to see appearances as empty. It happens naturally. And sometimes that happens suddenly, just like that. That experience is called Kensho. That's what Dogen had when he heard that phrase, cast off body and mind, and suddenly he found himself, no body, no mind, just awareness, no attachment. Having forgotten the self and being enlightened by the 10,000 things. And Dogen talks about how to get out of samsara, how to get out of the wheel of life, death, birth, death, rebirth, re-death. In the Shobo Genzo and in the portion called Life, Death. In living, there's nothing but life. In dying, nothing but death. So let life be life, and when death comes, face it. And offer yourself. Don't love one and hate the other. Again, getting back to this idea of dana, generosity, offering yourself. Offer yourself to life. Be there for what life has to offer. You can only be there for what life has to offer if you will offer yourself to life. But don't think there's anything to hold on to while you're doing it. And of course we form attachments of various kinds. There are deep connections that we have with other individuals, organizations, practices, pets. And it's okay to recognize those attachments, but to recognize them in such a way that you are not a slave to them. In living, there's nothing but life. Whatever is happening, good, bad, it's just life. You screw up, that's just life. Somebody else screws up, that's just life. Somebody disappoints you, that's just life. No big deal. And when death comes, it's just death. It comes to everybody. Soen Roshi used to call the dead the majority. So one of these days, we're all going to join the majority. Mark Twain was asked about death, and he said, I'm not bothered by death. I was dead for billions and billions of years, and it never bothered me. The problem comes when you love one and hate the other. And this is something that you see over and over again in Zen teachings, Sozen Ganchi Zenji's faith in mind. The perfect way is not difficult for those who are not caught up in preferences. Those who are not caught up in love or hate. And of course, this doesn't mean that you can't love your wife, your husband, your dog, your family. It's a matter of slavery or freedom. Recognizing that life is just life, death is just death, and everything is constantly changing. And as long as you are trying to hold on to something, you're going to be hurt, dissatisfied, suffering. Use whatever synonym you want. As long as you think that I can do this, I can have it all, that's just ignorance. This life death is the life of the Buddha. In other words, this samsara, this world that we live in that's full of suffering, is the life of the Buddha. Hakuin says, sentient beings are fundamentally all Buddhas. The Tendai sect that Dogen was rebelling against, again, said the same thing. We're all Buddhas, even here in this samsaric world that we live in. If you hate this samsaric world, this life-death that is the life of the Buddha, hate it, and you lose the life of the Buddha. He's talking here specifically to those people who are religious fanatics and who turn away from life, who say, life is just suffering, so I'm not going to have any attachments. I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, because this is all evil. He's saying, do that at your own, you know, you can do that, but you do that and you lose it all. You can't simply turn away. You have to love. But you have to have the proper understanding when you love. You have to participate, but you have to have the proper understanding when you participate. Hate it, turn your back on life, and you lose the life of the Buddha. On the other hand, dwell in samsara, holding tight to it, and you lose the life of the Buddha. And all that's left is a lifeless Buddha. Only when you neither love nor hate. And I have to think there must be a better translation here than love or hate. And it's something that we have to think about. What does that really mean? Only when you neither love nor hate. When you're neither ruled by love, nor ruled by hate. When you don't think that you can hold on, and you don't think that you can get away from. Love, in this sense, really expresses the poison of grasping, the poison of greed, the poison of wanting to hold on, to get more. Hate really expresses the poison of aversion, which is the two sides of aversion, is running away from something, avoiding it, or smashing it. Those are the two ways of getting away from something, fight or flight. Only when you are neither a slave to grasping nor a slave to aversion are you in the heart of the Buddha. Never judge. Never be attached to your judgment. You know, one of the fundamental practices of mindfulness is observing without judging. Which doesn't mean that you can't experience it as something as good or bad. You know, you sit and you have pain, and you say, that's really painful. But if you judge that and say, God, I wish I didn't have pain, you've already fallen into aversion. And if the pain makes you angry, you've already lost it. That's what he means by never judge. What is pain? It's an energy. It's a strong sensation. It's a tool. There are a lot of different things that you can say about pain without saying that it's good or it's bad. And same thing about sleepiness or any of the other things that plague you, both in the Zendo and out in the real world. Never judge. Don't talk about it. Cut body mind free and abandon it. Life is life, death is death. What's there to talk about? Cut yourself free and abandon it. Throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. This is another way of saying dana, generosity. Give yourself entirely. Give everything, everything you've got in you, give it away. Throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. Throw yourself into life. When death comes, offer yourself to death. Good fortune, bad fortune, offer yourself. Pleasure or pain, offer yourself without judging, without attaching, without tying yourself into knots. Throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. Let him show you the way and simply follow him without trying or fretting. Now, this is a lot easier in a monastic community where there are schedules to follow, and if you're in the monastic community that Dogen set up, there are something like 500 precepts governing everything from how to go to the bathroom to how to eat and how to sit and how to keep your room clean. All you've got to do is follow the rules. Let him show you the way. Just follow the precepts. But without fretting about it. Hey, you missed one? Okay. You missed one. Yeah. The tray slips. You know, accidents happen. Without trying or fretting. There's nothing to worry about. Oh, Shariputra, there's nothing to worry about. Form is emptiness and emptiness is form. So what are you getting so upset about? Throw yourself into the house of the Buddha, let him show you the way and simply follow him without trying or fretting. Then you can be free from life, death. That's how you get free from the hell realm, the hungry ghost realm, the asuras, the demons, the demigods. That's how you are free from envy and malice. Just throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. Just act with this mind, the mind of freedom and liberation. That's what it means to not try and not fret. When you're doing, do. And stop worrying about, can I do this? Just do it. And if you fail, okay, that's fine. Do it again. But don't fret about it. There's no point. Then you can be free from life, death. Who can resist that? It's a wonderful expression of how to cut yourself free. Something to keep in mind when this wandering around in the six worlds is getting you down.
This has been a Zen Studies Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.